Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 387.
This week on the podcast, we joked Donald Trump would not need an impeachment defense to get off scot-free, and he didn't have one.
And there's blowback for GOP convictors, although not yet enough blowback for Mitch McConnell's open hypocrisy.
Plus, Trump's COVID was more serious than we were told, but yet it was also less serious than it could have been.
And I guess local GOP officials would be the ones to know if Antifa caused the Capitol riots, because tons of them were active participants.
Plus, in the Biden administration, threatening the press gets you suspended, not promoted.
And weather. It's everywhere. We'll tell you what to do.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. On the web.
On the web. What a week, you guys.
I mean, hello. This week really did have it all. I mean, obviously, you know, there was an impeachment trial, but I have to say that, like, you know, look, in all seriousness, because the Capitol riot and insurrection was a very serious matter, this impeachment trial had the level of comedy that I was hoping that it would have, but kind of didn't actually think that it would because, like,
yeah,
you know, but I mean, it really came in hot.
I made a presumption that the Trump administration would try, as they did in the last impeachment trial, to bring just like a minor amount of seriousness to their defense. But they decided to go the full other direction. They were just like, let's get in there, say a bunch of completely batshit insane crap. We'll bring in some hilariously edited videos. We will cause the Senate to burst into laughter multiple times because that's what we've been left with.
And caused me at home to burst into laughter way more times than the actual Senate did.
Numerous times. I mean, it was really, it was interesting because the House managers did such a great job building a really effective case. And the defense was like so silly that it didn't feel like it belonged in the same week. Like it felt like they were doing a television spoof about, you know, the SNL version of the impeachment trial. And like the House managers were taking it so seriously and they were much better than the House managers were in the last impeachment trial. I want to go on the record as saying that I said back in 2019, everyone was going on and on about how much they loved Adam Schiff, how effective Adam Schiff was. Adam Schiff is no Jamie Raskin. And I think now that we have seen with our own eyes what a great performance can look like in an impeachment trial, I feel like we can stop pretending that Adam Schiff is some sort of god among men.
Right.
And we can certainly stop pretending like he deserves any higher office in California. We can just
for sure
carry on with our lives assuming that Adam Schiff is where he belongs and also not where he belongs, because where he belongs is in a different district than my district.
Thank you.
He belongs in a swing district somewhere else.
Yeah.
Just elsewhere, an elsewhere district.
Exactly. Yeah.
In any case,
I do want to mention before we get into all of the details of impeachment, I thought it was very interesting that the Biden administration very carefully scheduled the Neera Tanden hearings for Office of Budget Management, whatever the heck she's been nominated for the mornings of the days of impeachment, because that is obviously the one cabinet pick that they did not want you paying any attention to the hearings of. And they were successful in that because I would almost guarantee you probably paid no attention to those. And interestingly enough, those also had a level of comedy that maybe you wouldn't have expected. So
true. I was going to say, if you heard about them at all, it was for the comedy. And it was for the comedy of watching the GOP just grill her about why she was so mean to Bernie Sanders.
Right, I know. And then Bernie Sanders himself also grill her about how he was mean to Bernie Sanders, or how she was mean to Bernie Sanders, and the left, just more broadly.
Yeah.
And I think they made a couple errors in that, although they got around to it eventually, and she kind of, like, said that she wasn't going to be, you know, making sure, like, there was no corporate money going to be coming in or whatever the hell, you know, because I feel like they spent a lot of time reading her mean tweets, which, A, felt small after we've spent an entire administration of mean tweets, but also it sort of ignored the fact that besides her persona on Twitter, she's a garbage candidate for this particular job.
And
I feel like that's where they
should
have spent
person.
The time.
Yeah. The time should have been spent confirming for Americans the thing that we know about her that is problematic beyond her Twitter persona, which is that she is owned by corporations.
Right, exactly.
She's not a person who speaks for her ideas. She speaks for money. So That's not.
But also find a clip of whatever Republican senator, I think it was Senator Kennedy.
I think it was Kennedy.
Say to her, you did everything but call Bernie Sanders a stupid slut or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember. So, like, there's moments from this hearing that are worth a revisit if you happen to miss them this week while you were watching the impeachment trial.
I also love that a lot of the Republicans have correctly identified something that the Democrats seem unable to correctly identify, which is that Bernie Sanders is really, like, the most beloved person in the Senate by, like, all of America. Right. Like, it is for them factually. An effective talking point, factually speaking, like, in that he is the most popular senator in America. But, right. And I think probably one of the most popular politicians in America, just full stop.
Yeah,
but, and for years he was at the top of that list. I just haven't seen a recent stat like that, but he was, like, known to have had the highest approval rating of any politician in America. But the idea that both the right and the left could unite over the fact that one way to really stick it to these people is to be like, well, you can't be mean to Bernie Sanders. What kind of monster would be mean to Bernie Sanders?
Right.
Like, that I just love.
Even though, the Republicans were like, we'll know how we'll get her.
That's right. We will show them exactly right. what all of America knows, which is that you cannot be insulting Bernie Sanders out on the internet like that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, and she's going to get confirmed, and Bernie Sanders is going to vote for her, which is disappointing.
Right. Which
here
is
we are. That's the world in which we live. So
it's the Biden world. We're in Biden world, and that's the kind of situation that we end up in Biden world.
Yeah.
It kind of came back. I feel like there was a moment in the impeachment trial, kind of like that, where during the Senate questioning, the defense attorney Vander Veek was, getting questions from Democratic senators, and Bernie asked one, and he said, "Who asked this?" And then Bernie was like, "I did." And then the whole Senate was like, "No," as it, like everyone in America was like, "You can't be like pointing your finger and trying to shout down Bernie Sanders." Like, kind of insane person thinks to do that. Like,
yeah.
In any case, it reminded me of the Neera Tanden hearings, and I thought, oh, callbacks to earlier in the week. In any case, impeachment 2, you guys. Fastest impeachment trial in history for what was also the most serious impeachment charge in history. Yep. So really lose-lose on everyone's account. The House impeachment team did a great job. If I have a lot of blame to go around for a lot of people about how this could have been better done, but they are not the people that I blame.
No, they are not. They did a really great job. They wove the story so expertly. I mean, in a way, and I will say, you know, you were talking about how they did a much better job than Adam Schiff, and while I wholeheartedly agree with you and also desperately want Adam Schiff not to be my congressperson, just separately from how he did during the first impeachment trial, I will say it's an easier sell.
For sure.
They still did a really good job. And the way they told the story, I mean, there was one moment during one of the days, and we're going to take you through each day, but like just specifically where they were like tracking what was going on and showing video. And then they had the other like schematic of the Capitol showing where they were in like and how close they were getting. And then also what Trump was tweeting at the same time. And like the whole, they really just, it was well done. It was well made for television.
Yeah.
It was,
there was,
it was
a
just,
moment
it was
where
A plus work.
Eric Swalwell, who I hate almost as much as Adam Schiff for separate reasons having to do with his dumb hair, also had me riveted. And I just thought, I never saw this coming. One thing I hate about Eric Swalwell is that I find him to be like one of the least interesting people to hear speak about any one single topic at all. He's one of those people that a little bit like Pete Buttigieg gives millennials a bad name because it makes it seem like we're all like Kennedy era hair wearing idiots. Like and so normally I find him just like completely impossible to listen to.
Yeah.
And there was just like a moment in there where he was helping, you know, break down the timeline of what happened. And there was like video we'd never seen before of the security cameras, like of what was going on. And I was just like riveted. And I thought I never would have guessed Eric Swalwell had this capability.
No, I know.
And there was like a lot of them, like there were a few younger members of that because Joe Neguse was also really good. And he was funny too, because in the beginning I was like, oh, these young upstarts, like all the young people would come on and I'd be like, because I think just because I hate Eric Swalwell so much, I was just like, I can't with any of these people. But he, I think, gave some of the best closing statements of anyone, really, like the first really like emotional pitch in the closing, you know, in the closing statements. And he really effectively sort of like wove a story out of his arc, out of his appearance arc, in a way that
he was great.
Yeah,
like a star turn for him, and totally. Deservedly so. I will never, you know, I may disagree with him at some point, but I will never, from this day forward, like tell you that he's anything other
than.
And
for
like
me,
it was
a slow growth for me, because initially I find this problem with a lot of young male politicians, where I feel like they have this Buttigieg like quality of being a guy I remember from high school who mansplained everything to me. And yep. he had a little bit of that quality early on, because he was explaining constitutional law. And because when someone my own age is explaining something on TV, I just usually get annoyed at them. And also because he reminds me of peers of mine who have done this to me in areas where I am actually the expert. I just like immediately was like, ugh. But he grew on me over the course of the week. And then I decided that he was great at the end. And so he had a real arc for me in a way that I didn't expect. Sure. Jamie,
also Stacey Plaskett, another star.
Oh my God,
star turn,
she was the breakout star, I think, of that.
Amazing. She did a great job, and she was also, and she was doing it while serving looks.
Exactly. That's right.
I mean,
yeah, that first outfit that she wore with the weird cape sleeves and then whatever, that was how she ended up on everyone's radar. And
like,
then we
she
were
like treated this like the impeachment ball, basically.
Yes,
I mean, like
exactly.
And I deeply approve of that. Also, I approve more of it because she was doing such a great job.
Yeah, she, I think, was the person who got, like, the most kind of, like, sudden fame out of this experience. Because I think, first of all, you know, there were far fewer women on the impeachment manager's team. The very first day, not a single woman spoke. And so I was sitting there like, where are the women? Are there women? Who are the women? And then also Stacey Plaskett, she's the Virgin Islands at-large rep, which means she's not a voting member. She's not somebody who normally you like see out on TV saying anything. And so she was really somebody who kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But she also she's also a New Yorker. So obviously I suspected, as soon as I learned that, I was like, well, she's going to be great. I mean, we got to know that. But she was the first, I think she was the first or maybe the second woman that we heard speak. I think she was the first woman that we heard speak. I think she spoke before Madeline Dean.
Actually, yeah.
And
I feel like we heard from Madeline Dean quite a bit.
Right.
She was fine.
Yeah, she's fine. Diana DeGette was wearing a ridiculous coat, and no one could get over it because it was so loud and crazy that you just like, and to the extent, she also wasn't like a particularly compelling speaker. So her coat really like overshadowed her. just in the way that Eric Swalwell's hair usually overshadows his performances for me, like her coat was doing that work.
Yeah, well, you can't look at anything other than Eric Swalwell's hair because you can't understand how it works or functions. It's like newscaster hair. It's like Lego hair.
It's like Lego hair. When he said that he comes from a family of cops, I was finally like, oh, I see what happened. Like as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, he looks like he comes from a family of cops, and that's the hair of the one politician in a family of cops. Like that's who you are. And then also Joaquin Castro with his ridiculous beard and he was great once you could listen to him, but you had to first get over the fact that, first of all, I now have a new opinion on identical twins being in similar but not identical roles in government, which is that I'm against it. It's too confusing for us to have gone through this whole cycle with Julian, and we like Julian Castro. He would have been one of, outside of the like far lefty lefties, he would have been one of our top choices for presidential candidate for sure. Like I would say him and Kamala would have been somewhere in my third choice, rung under the Bernie Liz far left, pantheon. And for Brent, right behind Marianne Williamson. For me, far ahead of Marianne Williamson. Either way. But so we had seen quite a bit of him, and we saw him a few times as a surrogate for Liz Warren when we went to Liz Warren events after he dropped out. Yeah. We had been seeing quite a bit of him. We'd been into it. It was the first time I had really thought, oh, the Castro brothers, interesting. Because I had initially accused them of being quite boring, which I still sort of believe. And in any case, Joaquin is trying to grow a beard, I guess, so that he doesn't look like the identical twin of Julian. But what he looks like is Julian in disguise now. And I just, like, can't. It looks like Julian Castro is trying to show up at hearings in disguise as a fake, like, disguise, like the way you'd put on, like, ridiculous glasses with a mustache attached to them or something. And I just can't get that, like, thought out of my head. There were two slapstick moments that were really hitting me on the Democratic side. That being one, because just every time I saw Joaquin on screen, I was like, I can't with this ridiculous beard. And then the second was that every time that Jamie Raskin referred to Joe Neguse, because he referred to his comments a few times in some of his own comments, because I was listening to a lot of it on the radio while I was like walking down the street, and so the sound quality wasn't great, it sounded like he was saying Mr. Magoo every single time. And I just like couldn't, it was too funny. I just like couldn't stop hearing Mr. Magoo. I kept being like, why are the Democrats referencing Mr. Magoo so frequently? This is insane. But
well, I mean, there were some Mr. Magoo-esque characters involved in this impeachment trial, but they were on the defense side.
They were on the defense side, exactly. But yeah, overall, the Democratic defense, whether or not they had dumb beards, was really spectacular. Jamie Raskin his comments on the very first day, I think, were the main thing to go viral from that day because they were so well done. On the Democrat side, right. He makes you cry in the middle. He makes you laugh. He makes you feel good. He makes you feel nervous. I mean, you run the whole gamut with him.
Yeah.
The proceedings on day one, on Tuesday, were just about whether it was constitutional to proceed with this vote at all after Mitch McConnell blocked them from taking this up during the last session and then decided it wouldn't be constitutional for them to take it up in the second session. This was the day that not a single woman spoke. Jamie Raskin made his great remarks. And then we got treated to Trump's lawyers for the first time. And boy, was that a scene.
They really delivered. Bruce Castor specifically
did
exactly what I was hoping this batch of D-list lawyers was going to deliver. Because that was... that was probably the best hour of my life in recent memory. Just the whole experience of it. And
it was really like it rivaled the Trump Steaks press conference in terms of just like quality television that is both unexpected and wildly entertaining.
Well, it was one of those things where it was just sort of like I was watching it. You and Grant were watching it. The text thread was very active. Twitter was doing some of its best work in quite some time.
You didn't really have to pay attention.
All of the elements, really came together at one time to create a really magical moment for America.
You didn't really have to pay attention also because Bruce Castor was talking for a long time but said next to nothing in that time. Nothing that he said was intelligible. You couldn't get a point, even if you were looking to like pull a point out of the like gobble of crazy that was coming out of his mouth. Like, you just couldn't. It was like our favorite poet laureate, Sarah Palin, in a slightly more incompetent form, because at least she has the sort of cadence of a slam poet. So you're sort of like, I'm listening to like a poem about America that doesn't really make any sense, but it's kind of like got its own poetry and rhythm. This was like a rhythmless Sarah Palin speech.
Well, he was literally winging it, because we found out at the end of his rambling hour-long speech, he basically gave away why he had been rambling the entire time, because he said that they regrouped and switched the order because the House managers did such a good job. And apparently later in the day, we found out the reason that he went first was because they wanted to bring the temperature down in the room, because it had gotten so emotional, and there was that video that the Democrats showed, which was really well produced, and also just like I think really put everyone on edge to a degree, I guess. So their idea was to come out and just like have this like happy-go-lucky guy just like really be nice to everyone and like give a speech about like coming together and about like how it didn't make any sense. No. And it was because he just went out there to like ramble for an hour.
Yeah,
the next
he
guy,
filibustered.
Schoen.
Yeah, David Schoen
kind of got to some points.
Right, he's the one who was what's his face's lawyer, not Weinstein's lawyer, Epstein's lawyer.
Epstein's lawyer. Yeah, right.
So with him though, we got distracted because after we had stopped listening by this point because Bruce Castor had said nothing in that entire time, and so we're not in the habit of listening by the time David Schoen came up. And then he was drinking his water really weird, and there are issues with water on the Republican side already.
Republican water drinking.
It's like a real epidemic. And apparently we learned later that he was doing that because he's an Orthodox, he's like a modern Orthodox Jew. And so, and he was not wearing a yarmulke, and you have to cover your head when you're drinking water. And the reason he wasn't wearing a yarmulke was because he was representing a Nazi, by the way, you guys. I mean, it's like complicated if you're going to be an Orthodox Jew to represent a Nazi, because then you might get made fun of for how you drink water, because it looked like he was holding his head on as he drank. And like, given the number of water drinking incidents the Republicans have suffered through in the last 10 years, it was really sort of notable to people. It wasn't like just a thing that you could forget, because it brought up memories of all the other times Republicans have failed to drink water like normal people.
Well, and that's what happened. That really sent me to a place. I went to another. I felt like day one, I was at. Well, I even texted you this. At one point, I had been watching it all morning, and I thought to myself, "Oh, I need to go make breakfast." And it was like 1:45 in the afternoon. I had not done work, and I was very busy this week at work. I mean, I literally lost. I lost time. I had like an out of body experience, and when that when the drinking first started, which I now sort of maybe feel a little bad, at least for him. Although I feel like you're right, though.
He probably got told that he
couldn't wear it, so I know.
Well, I don't feel bad for somebody who gets made fun of for representing a Nazi while doing that.
Exactly.
If he was somebody who was just doing something that is a culturally relevant thing to him in another context where he's not literally advocating for a group of people that are trying to destroy, you know, an anti-Semitic group of people that are trying to destroy the culture that he's there representing, then that's one thing. But you can certainly make fun of somebody for drinking water funny because they're Jewish and representing a Nazi. I think that's allowed every time.
I had a moment where I was actually on the floor of my own apartment. I was trying to control myself. I was coughing. I was crying.
How could you also, like, in a context in which Donald Trump has failed to drink water, Marco Rubio has failed to drink water. I mean, the amount of water drinking mishaps that have gone on in the last few years with this party is just out of control. So what were you supposed to do when yet another water drinking mishap arrives on the scene in this package where we've already listened to them give the most incompetent defense anyone has ever given for anything for like an hour and a half? We've literally watched, like, Bruce Castor, I was expecting him to start, you know, going into some of our filibuster favorites, like giving, like, Roquefort salad dressing and fried oyster recipes and, like, reading Green Eggs and Ham and, like, all the greats, because he was just, like, literally filibustering for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then for David Schoen to come in, and he was so angry, you know, he came in and he was so really mad, and I was like, why are you so mad, first of all? Second of all, you can't then do comical water drinking that is only comical because you've gotten yourself into a situation where you have been asked to remove a piece of, you know, religious paraphernalia or religious, you know, garb because you're literally representing a Nazi.
Yeah.
You don't get to do it. And, I get that we want to be sensitive to everyone as much as possible in all contexts. I think this is an example of a time that you don't get sensitivity, though. You don't deserve the sensitivity. You have not earned the sensitivity.
Yeah, I agree.
In any case, so that was hilarious. And I, like, by, you know, 4 p.m., we weren't allowed to say it was hilarious anymore, but I still maintain it was hilarious. Because
It was hilarious.
It was hilarious at the time. It remains hilarious to me that there have been this many dramas over water drinking in the Republican Party.
Well, right, yeah, exactly.
I mean, the sort of larger context remains hilarious. So I don't know what we were supposed to do in that moment. We weren't supposed to know that that was what was going on.
Right.
And we weren't supposed to not laugh because it was very funny. So in any case, that was Tuesday. Wednesday was the day that the House impeachment managers got to make their case. As we said, Stacey Plaskett, huge breakout star. Everyone was great, though. They did a really effective job of weaving together the story. I even found myself listening to Eric Swalwell.
Yep.
Then on Thursday, that was the defense's day. And that was a roller coaster. First of all, I mean, the whole thing was hilarious. This time, Van der Veen, the personal injury attorney who was not given the opportunity to speak on Tuesday, was the one who did the bulk of the presenting. David Schoen was also there, I believe. But he really put on a personal injury attorney show during all of that. It was very operatic, which is very un-Senate-like, which and very Trump-like. I mean, Trump is very operatic, and so it had this very Trump-like quality, which was funny. But also, their defense strategy was the most insane and ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. At one point, they played a supercut of Democrats saying the word fight that went on an amount of time that, you know how, like, you know, like, there's, like, an amount of time a joke is funny, and then it kind of stops being funny because you've heard it too many times, and then it comes back around to be funny because it's gone on too long? And, like, So it begins with like 100 hours of Liz Warren saying the word fight. There's a lot of clips of her doing that because her campaign slogan was Dream Big, Fight Hard. So you can find her saying the word fight all over the place. Yeah. Then, and so that went on for long enough.
Interestingly, not intercut with middle-aged white women at Liz Warren rallies taking over the Capitol.
No, I mean, there were so many ways in which Democrats were able to say the word fight that many times without a single person rioting in the Capitol. Yeah. And certainly no one tried to overturn an election over it. So it's been curious. I don't know that it made the second point, which was that there was causal towards anything. Like, in any case. So it's like 100 hours of Liz Warren saying the word fight. And you're like, ha 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 ha, after a while. And then you're like, this is going on a little long. Now I'm kind of bored. And then it goes on to be other politicians every single time they've ever said the word fight, including times that are from like years ago. I mean, it's just like Nancy Pelosi from 1984 saying the word fight, like just on and on and on and on. And so about 5 to 100 hours later, it started to be so funny that I couldn't control myself anymore. And I was literally laughing on the floor of my house alone. Yeah. I was just like alone in my house cackling on the floor because, and I was not alone in doing that because the Senate itself started laughing during it because it got so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And also it was right on the heels of this long screed about how the House managers had doctored footage to take it out of context. And then they decided they were going to dispel all of these myths about what Donald Trump had said by showing the full clip. But oftentimes the clip would go on so long because you had to get like 5 minutes past where he'd said the incendiary thing to get to the point where he says something minorly less incendiary. And by that point, he said like 10 more incendiary things.
Right. So that's the story of Donald Trump's speech giving.
Exactly. So they would show like this was cut before he got to the point. And then it would be like, it would go on for like another 5 minutes, which is like the full speech that he gave. And then at the end, he'd be like, we love you or something. And then they'd be like, see, you know, and then, but this is all on the heels of this long screed about how House managers were doctoring footage. And then all of their footage had music behind it. All of it was like weird supercuts of Democrats saying words and things. So very dramatic, very operatic, very ineffective, wildly incompetent, and it was like obvious to any person with eyes.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. Then on Friday was the Senate questioning. That was, as I said, there was a great moment where they said, who said this to Bernie Sanders? Yeah. And he was like, I did. And everyone was like, no.
And there were questions, too. Like,
oh, my God. Well, one of them was whether Donald Trump had been the most pro-Israel president in history.
Pro-Israel, that's the one I was...
From the Republican side, of course.
Yeah.
And so that was hilarious. Also, I mean, there were so many hilarious moments in that, including Van Der Veen claiming that Antifa was who stormed the Capitol. There was saying that the impeachment managers had not shown a single example of Donald Trump urging anyone to engage in violence of any kind, which is refuted by every single clip of Donald Trump that exists in the world. They claimed that, you know, that Kamala Harris had refused to condemn acts of violence during the BLM protests.
I mean,
which is ridiculous.
Biden-Harris administration were trying to both sides that
Literally, all lives mattered. Eric Garner's family, his mother, right? I'm like, they literally, all lives mattered. The victims of specific racist police violence that we famously associate with the BLM movement on live television
during the convention.
Like, don't try us with that. But so, in any case, their defense was wild and hilarious. And then at the end of the day, after they've finally gone off the air, because their defense was also only like 3 hours long because they just like didn't have much to say.
Yeah.
That evening, as they're covering it, CNN breaks a news story about a phone call between Kevin McCarthy and Trump during the riot, because part of what they're claiming is that there's no proof that Donald Trump knew that Mike Pence was in danger when he tweeted that they should go after Mike Pence. Now, everyone in America knew. So if he didn't know, he was being pretty negligent in his job, because even I knew at that time, because it was on live television on every major news network.
Of course.
And so, of course, he knew. And
he was watching.
They were, exactly. His defense was treating it like a criminal trial where you have to prove everything beyond a shadow of a doubt. But you don't have to do that in an impeachment hearing.
Impeachment, right.
And also, anyone who has even like a lick of just like not even common sense, but any form of sense would know that if regular people like me and Brent knew that the vice president was in danger at the time that Donald Trump tweeted that, then he, a person with access to not just cable news like us, but also special high-level briefings, probably knew that as well. And also, we know he was watching TV because he was commenting on what he was seeing. So, like, whatever. In any case, a lot of their defense rested on the fact that we couldn't prove that he knew that at the time. Mm-hmm. But then, news of this phone call breaks, which is... So, Jamie Herrera Butler, who is a freshman, or I think maybe a second-term Republican congressperson... Yeah. She's new-ish. I don't know if this is her first or second term. Who was one of the few Republicans who voted for the impeachment in the House. Broke a story to CNN, leaked a call that Kevin McCarthy and Trump had had that Kevin McCarthy was pissed about, so he told everyone about. During which he, A, told Trump that the vice president had been removed.
Yep.
And B, was mocked by Trump for not caring about the cause as much as the protesters. He literally said, he called Trump to say, will you, quote, publicly and forcefully call off the riot?
Yeah.
Trump says that they're Antifa, and he is not his supporters. You know, he's very curt about it. And then says, well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are. And Kevin McCarthy replies, who the fuck do you think you're talking to? In any case, so Jamie Herrera Butler breaks that story in and is like open that it is her that is breaking the story. She says other members heard this too. I took notes at the time because I saw that what was happening was problematic. You know, I saw that the president was violating his oath. And so she's been very forceful. I sort of respect her method for communicating this as well, because the other thing that I saw her do right after, you know, right after her impeachment vote, it started to get, you know, picked up by Republican sources who were pissed off, is she kind of pulled an AOC and did a thing where she hit social media and just very calmly and non-judgmentally explained to her conservative constituents why she felt that she had to do this and why it was the right thing to do. And it was a really well done explanation. Again, it is not like judgmental. So she's not like, you guys were sold a bill of goods by assholes. You know, like she doesn't do the thing where she blames them for anything, but she just says, here are the facts. I don't believe that a lot of people were given the correct facts. You know, I know that a lot of people weren't given the correct facts. Here are the facts. Here's what this means. Here's why I felt I had no choice but to take this action. And it's very like respectfully and sort of effectively done. And so she has basically put a big target on her back coming out as the Republican who's willing to be like, you guys, this is actually insane. Like, we shouldn't let this happen. So in any case, on Saturday, the day of the vote / the day before the Senate goes on vacation for a week.
Yeah.
The Dems, the House managers, throw a curveball to the entire Senate and say they want to bring her up as a witness.
Yeah.
And question her on the stand. That would have made the hearing extended to next week, meaning that senators would not be able to go home and vacation for a week. Then the GOP made a vague threat that they were going to bring 300 witnesses if they brought Herrera Butler. And because the Senate has to vote on each individual witness, that's not a real threat.
Yeah.
And I was also like, if you guys want to bring Nancy Pelosi, feel free to bring her to your heart's content. You'll be eaten alive by her. Like, you don't want Nancy Pelosi on the stand. So sorry about that. But so the Democrats make this push for witnesses. They have a vote and it passes. There are five senators who go along with it, who, you know, so it's 55-45 in favor of bringing witnesses. Lindsey Graham then changes his vote at the last minute and it's 56-44 because he has a plan to bring like a lot of nonsense conspiracy theory witnesses up, like whatever.
It's time to bring Hillary Clinton in for a
question. That's right. It's like, if you want to bring Hillary Clinton in and also be schooled by her, I do you. But if I were them, I would not be trying to bring Hillary Clinton in to make me look like a fool. In any case, this is all very dramatic. And so they have a, quote, quorum call, which is hilarious because they had just all 100 members voted on something 1 second before that. But that quorum call is so that they can turn off the microphones and have secret meetings without the microphones picking them up.
Yeah.
So it can be happening off camera. Come back and agree to just enter a statement from Herrera Butler into the record and carry on as if nothing has happened. Pissing off the entire Democratic and moderate Republican establishment who thought, like, look, we knew how the vote was going to go for this. So the question was never really about the vote. The question was 100% about the way that the American people were given access to the information and the information that they walked away with.
Yep.
And to have ruined an opportunity to bring a Republican congresswoman, I mean, even Fox News hosts were like, what the fuck, man?
Oh, yeah.
To bring a Republican congresswoman onto the stand to say that the president had violated his oath of office.
Yeah.
Was the most insane choice I feel like they could have made. A lot of, you know, a lot of moderate Dems have been like, oh, but the trial would have gone on and it would have, whatever. And I would say to that, because I'm sure that the Republicans were promising to be impossible if they did this. I have no doubt. The Republicans, though, are going to be impossible anyway. I don't know why we would listen to literally any threat that they make to us about anything. Their degree of impossibility doesn't depend on anything that we do. But also, that's one thing if $2,000 checks are arriving in our checking accounts on Monday. It's another if you're going to go on vacation for a week and you're not going to tackle the supposedly, you know, vital, critical things that you are, you know, moving this trial aside to tackle. So
yeah, I think this just very much seems like the second thing already in this administration, which is only a month old, where it has left people asking, you know,
why elect Democrats?
What they got is, you know, is worth it.
It puts Democrats in swing districts. It puts Democrats in safe districts into a terrible bind because it made them look ineffective and it sucked up all the air so that as they made what were really well-considered closing remarks, nobody was listening because everyone was furious. And so they wasted a huge opportunity with their voters to not only educate their voters about why this was so critically important that they pursue this impeachment, because it made it seem like after all that bluster that it wasn't that big a deal anyway, so we should just get it over with.
Yeah, and then we don't actually need witnesses. Right. It's fine. Like, we're just going to go home. So like,
and by the way, just in case you're wondering if people were persuadable, maybe they wouldn't have gotten 10 more votes. I'm not suggesting that this was necessarily going to go their way.
Yeah, two more.
But people were persuadable because they did gain two votes. Yeah. The evidence was that damning. So to put that before the American people, remember, the question was not really what do individual senators feel about this. The question is, what do the American people feel is right to do here? Because the American people are the ones who are being represented by these senators. The American people are who can call these senators and say, I'm your constituent and you're fucking asshole if you don't vote to convict this guy. That the whole thing had been staged for television, and then at the last minute they punted.
Right.
And that, I think, was an example of their inferiority as message deliverers, as it basically made them look like they had lost the impeachment hearing.
Totally.
It made them look like the losers.
Message deliverers. But I think what is more troubling to me is that it proved they're worse message givers and they're worse power havers.
Yes.
And that is what I think is like the most concerning to me, because I feel like you don't actually have power if you have not acknowledged and accepted that you are going to use it in any way.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, they,
and
for a
they
month,
had they, all the leverage here.
Right. They all have all the leverage here. They also have it on the stimulus, which we've been, you know, ragging on them about. And now they're going home for a week. They have now, in the two biggest things that have been in front of their faces since January 20th, they have refused to use the power that they were given by the American people. So that is that's a problem, because how are we going to ever get anything that Biden promised or that we were promised in some of these Senate races? We're refusing to use the power that we were given. So we may as well not have it. Like, Mitch McConnell may as well be the
Senate leader
right now.
We don't have it if we're refusing to use it. There's no argument for electing Democrats if they can't deliver on anything.
Correct.
And I would say, if you're so concerned that no stimulus package has been passed in this time, vote on that fucker before you start the impeachment trial then. they had an opportunity to bring this to a vote first if they had just decided we're going to fucking go in, we're going to pass it with reconciliation, we are not going to care what the Republicans think because they are not arguing in good faith, they're not negotiating in good faith, which they are not. Like, there is no reason.
They promised that they could walk and chew gum at the same time, and they can't.
Right, and now they're claiming that they had that it was better that they just ended the impeachment hearing here because they have to get other stuff done. But the other stuff could have got, first of all, they could have voted on it in between, I'm pretty sure, since they were able to vote on honoring Eugene Goodman in between all of the hearing stuff, since they were able to hold a hearing for Neera Tanden in the mornings, since they were able to do some other stuff while they were holding this hearing, I'm pretty sure they could have managed to hold a vote for something else if they had needed to. But also, they shouldn't have needed to because we should already have that stimulus money. That stimulus package should already be done. And they're giving themselves till March, which is 1 month away, to make that happen, as if we need all this time to like juggle plates or whatever. Like,
and couldn't call witnesses in this impeachment trial because they needed to go on vacation for a week.
Exactly, because if you could, if you don't have time to deal with one single witness, which would have taken less than a week, then because you have to go on vacation for a week, then like in the middle of like what is both a crisis, you know, nationally, in the aftermath of a major political crisis. I mean, in a time of multi-crisisness, if you feel that you need to wrap things up because you won't have time to deal with them because your vacation is waiting, then, like, that is not an example of you working for the American people in the job that we have asked you to do. It is also, sometimes your vacation gets fucked up by your bosses needing something from you. I think both Brent and I and all people can attest to the fact that sometimes bosses fuck up your vacation. This is a time that your bosses, the American people, like needed something from you. And that sometimes fucks up your vacation. And that is too bad.
Yeah.
With great power comes great responsibility. Need I remind them? But in any case, that was the biggest fuck up, I feel like. And anyone who is not anyone who is trying to tell me right now that is not a major fuck up, because what if they had gotten and drawn into months of whatever, is A, ignoring the point, which is ignoring the point that they should have passed a stimulus before they started this. They should have been doing that on day one like they claimed they were going to do, so that this would not be a question of holding off stimulus funds. B, who are they negotiating with on the Senate side for the stimulus? Like, what negotiation is happening that can't happen during the impeachment hearing? The Senate doesn't do any work. The House has all the time in the world to do the work that they need to do while the Senate is up to shenanigans. The Senate doesn't actually do any work, so I don't need anyone to tell me that they were too busy for any of this. And I think sometimes you have to take a short-term political loss to win a messaging war. The Republicans are willing to do that over and over and over again. They take short-term losses every single day. They look like complete assholes every single day, and they win the messaging war every time. The Democrats might have looked like they were being opportunistic by continuing to draw out this story. But the thing is, there were facts about this story that the American people deserved to hear that they did not get to hear because the Republicans convinced them somehow that they would be annoying afterwards. Well, they're going to be annoying anyway, you guys. Sorry about it. It's not going to change their annoyingness.
And the other thing is that Republicans will just completely ignore the messaging war and lose it and not care as long as they get what they want.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, look, there was not a single human being that wanted those $2 trillion tax cuts happening, but they didn't give a flying fuck.
That's right.
Right? And that is what I think that, like, and even here, you know, you and I were talking before the podcast about Mitch McConnell, where he, you know, gave that speech from the floor and everyone immediately was just sort of like, no, this level of hypocrisy is insane, because he was like, oh, it's unconstitutional that we're having this trial after he left, but I'm specifically the one responsible for having this trial after he left. Like, as insane and hypocritical as that is, like, he was able to get what he wanted. And he was able to get probably what the Republican Party broadly wanted, even though that may be an insane thing for them to want, because, like, why would they still want to have their lot?
This is not about
Trump
judging what they want, because what they want doesn't make sense on many levels.
Right. And I just want I just want our version of that.
I just want them to feel like Democrats are fighting that hard for their vision.
Yes.
Like, the Republicans fight really hard for their vision. Mitch McConnell embarrasses himself on TV every single day being the most evil, insane person, illogical person, hypocritical person that you've ever seen. And he always gets what he wants. Right. And listen, we are actually trying to get programs that benefit the American people.
That people will want. So.
And the thing, we only ever use these tactics for our you know, secret aims to help our donors.
Right.
We never use these tactics to help the American people.
If you have to do something openly nefarious to get a $2,000 check into my bank account and a $15 minimum wage on the books, then
I will
do
forgive
whatever
that
nefarious thing is. Because you're absolutely right. They're doing nefarious shit all the time to, cozy up to their corporate donors.
Yeah.
So, now
yeah, if you want, if they will happily pass some sort of, repealing a regulation that benefits the health insurance industry in the most nefarious possible manner.
Right.
They're not afraid to do that for their donors, but they never step up for the people. No. And I don't know how Democrats are supposed to run in 2022 saying, you elected us, we made promises to you, we couldn't deliver on them for reasons no one can identify because they were right in front of us and we had majorities in every house. And no voter wants to hear, oh, but Mitch McConnell was being difficult when he didn't have a fucking majority. And then, but vote for us again because we're not as evil as the other people. The one thing that Donald Trump really excelled at with his voters was looking like he was being effective. And this man was not doing shit. He did not do anything all day long. He was a person who was literally playing golf and watching cable news for 100% of every day. He played a full year's worth of golf while he was the president. But did they get the tax cuts they wanted? Yes. Did they get $600 into people's hands, at the very last minute and $1,200 before that and then take full credit for it, even though he had nothing to do with it? Yes. Is the $2,000 conversation dead because he is no longer the president? Yes. These are all ways in which their messaging direct, the kind of messaging that resonates with regular people gets punted by the Democrats every time. And the Republicans, who aren't even doing anything, the Senate is a place where legislation goes to die. Mitch McConnell doesn't even bring stuff up for a vote on the floor when he's the majority leader. So they literally do nothing. I remember when I went to go watch the VCF vote, they looked so excited. And I was like, why do they all look so thrilled to do this? And the person next to me was like, well, they don't normally do anything here.
Right. They were actually passing something meaningful.
They were getting to pass meaningful legislation. Ted Cruz looked excited to be there. He walked in and gave us a huge thumbs up. The idea that Ted Cruz and also Liz Warren gave us thumbs up in that context was mind blowing. But they were just both excited to have literally anything to do.
Yeah.
The idea that we punt instead of taking those opportunities to fight for things that actually resonate with voters and then wonder why we lose winnable elections all the time.
Right.
Is mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I think this more than really anything convinced me, because this is also not something I saw as the fault of the impeachment managers. I think they did a fantastic job. This was the Senate Democrats.
Yeah, it was the Senate Democrats.
And if this is the Senate Democrats, then we need new leadership in there.
Yeah. They once again negotiated with themselves down from something. That
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in any case, Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer got up and made a statement that no one listened to because he's not very good at delivering speeches. Mitch McConnell got up and delivered a statement that everyone noticed because it was so hypocritical that it was mind-boggling. He literally got up and basically agreed with all of the charges and said that Trump's behavior had been unacceptable and basically admitted that he had instigated a riot and then said that the reason he had voted to acquit was because the trial that he himself had pushed was unconstitutional because Donald Trump was no longer the president.
Yep.
Nancy Pelosi then got up and tore into him, rightfully.
Yeah.
Literally, she said, it's so pathetic that Senator McConnell kept the Senate shut down so the Senate could not receive the articles of impeachment and use that as his excuse for not voting to convict Donald Trump. She's been tweeting about it all day, too. She's not having this. But they should literally never let him forget this. We should literally never let him forget this. And also, do not take any word that this man says as anything more than silliness ever again.
Oh, yeah.
Do not, if he threatens you, threaten him back. If he tells you that he's not going to do something, tell him he is. Don't let his words mean anything because they don't, obviously.
Yeah.
Trump's response to all of this was that he promises more to come. So, we're probably going to have more coup attempts or whatever. It's okay to foment a coup now, so you can freely do that. Another thing that the left won't try is our own coup. And I hate us for that. I feel like if coups are allowed and anyone can start a coup, I don't see why we wouldn't get into the coup business also. We can't just let right-wing radicals be the only people who are doing coups.
No, I know.
Especially, cooing you can do, is a left-wing tradition.
Right, I know. You can also, and apparently you can do literally anything that you want in the last 3 weeks of your presidency, too. So I hope Joe Biden is filing this away for, you know.
The great disappointment of Joe Biden is that he is not. Right. He is not filing this away at all. He is not going to help us with our own coup in the last 3 weeks of his presidency. No. And that's so disappointing because, you know, the French would do it. Right. Every week the French try a coup. Yeah. The French left doesn't give a fuck about all of this, of these niceties. They're willing to have a riot any day. Yeah. I know sometimes you don't even know why they're having a riot. Sometimes it's not an issue-based riot. It's just everyone's just mad for reasons. They just show up and riot. Like, I feel like we're given a taste of the most extreme version of that, and now we're all just going to act like we all should get along, and the right is going to continue fomenting fucking revolutions.
Right.
And then we're going to wonder why we don't get any voters anymore.
Yeah.
It's like people are going to be more excited about meaningless, baseless revolutions than they are about voting for people who can't deliver on direct promises they made to you.
Right.
Oh, man. In any case, some final notes. Mike Lee was being a shit for this entire thing.
Totally.
He's such an ass. I can't even with him. And then also, all of the Trumpers, like the Ted Cruz's and Josh Hawley's of the world, were like openly meeting with the defense in their spare time, including on the Senate floor. On the floor of the trial. They're just, and then they had the audacity to claim that they were not conducting it in a professional manner on the House manager side while they were literally meeting with the jury in open view of everyone having private conversations.
Yeah.
In any case. I mean,
go figure.
What a bunch of goons. Also, if you did not see the clip of Vanderveer saying the word Philadelphia wrong, then please, Philadelphia, a place that he lives and works, then please go ahead and do that, because that is one of the times the Senate just broke into uproarious laughter. But also, it's probably one of the funniest moments of television of the last week. So, and it's been a big week for television. So,
yeah.
Meanwhile, so in the end, a sort of startling seven Republicans broke ranks to vote to convict Trump, which it was the most bipartisan impeachment both in the House and the Senate of all time.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah, it was five that you would expect, and then they added Burr and Cassidy.
Yeah, who are, I believe, Burr and, no, and Toomey also.
Oh,
Then Toomey and Burr are not running next year. And I think Cassidy, I think, just got reelected, but he's already been censured by the Louisiana Republican Party.
Yeah, of course he has.
Which is like, surprise. Yeah, they're all trying to censure all of the people now for like,
I mean,
being, I don't know.
Whatever.
The only person who's on the ballot in 2022 that voted for it is Lisa Murkowski, but you can't fuck with Lisa Murkowski.
No.
She's a person who has literally run as a writing candidate with the name Murkowski. Like, Lisa Murkowski doesn't fear for her job.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't worry about her.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all starting to get blowback.
Yeah, the blowback.
I feel there is, though, an interesting caucus of House freshmen and near freshmen who came out in favor of the impeachment, who I feel like are coalescing into like a sort of squad of the right, who are not squad of the far right, obviously, a squad of the center right, squad of the sort of more rational right, who are, I think, are sort of positioning themselves as like the bailout option for the future of the party. And I think that they're right to do that. I think they sense that this is not a sustainable thing that's going on right now in the Republican Party. It does seem like some move to create space for a different genre of Republican Party among some of the younger members, in the same way that it's almost like the system is recentering itself, because the young members of both parties are much farther to the left of the old members of both parties. So, you know, it's sort of similar to what's happening on the left where, you know, the far left, which is, by the way, like the center left of most countries. So they're not radicals. AOC is not a radical. She's like a centrist, you know, left, a center left person from any other reasonable country. But it seems like the center to medium right is also kind of trying to refashion themselves into some other kind of group. They're probably joining the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is the most annoying caucus in the entire House. But, you know, it does seem like there's some movement among younger members there to be like, hey, what if we weren't insane? What if we were just medium assholes like we've always been? Which I'm in favor of.
Yeah.
In any case, we also learned this week amidst all of this.
Yeah.
That Donald Trump, when he had COVID, was way sicker than they let on.
Oh my God. Which isn't surprising at all, but it was interesting to hear this week because we, you know, there were multiple instances where, like, back in October, like, they were reporting that, like, he had received oxygen, like, before he went to Walter Reed or, like, when he first got there. And then also, like, you'll remember that his physician at Walter Reed was being very coy with the details that he was releasing, and he asked about the oxygen, like, got asked about the oxygen a million times, and he kept being like, well, he didn't receive any today, and he didn't receive any earlier this morning, or, you know, like, he kept, like, talking.
Oh, and meanwhile,
he, like,
Mark Meadows was, like, accidentally leaking to the press that Trump was, like, much sicker than he was letting on. Basically, like, Meadows was overheard
saying that
in this time, so we knew that his doctor was not being truthful anyway.
Right. But just this week, the New York Times reported that apparently there was, like, a very real discussion about whether he was going to go on a ventilator or not.
Yeah. His blood oxygen level dipped into the 80s.
Right. And he also had he had lung infiltrates, which is occur when the lungs are inflamed and contain substances such as fluid and bacteria. And
so
that,
he
like,
had
the presence of those is a sign that you have an acute case of the disease. Like, they're easily, like, you can find them easily, like, on a chest x-ray.
Well, so you've, like, seen them probably because we used to see them, people used to show them in March in the news a lot, where it looks like little white specks all over your lungs.
Yeah.
He had that. He also was told that if he didn't walk out of the White House when he did, they were going to have to bring him out on a stretcher. It also sounds like that antiviral or the
Regeneron
antibodies
or
Regeneron or whatever, that, you know, the non-FDA approved special medicine that he got, they requested it and wouldn't tell anyone who it was for. But even Melania also had a fairly serious case of it, it turned out, because even
she
had to get it.
Hers with holistic medicines such as herbal teas. She refused to take anything other than herbal teas.
Maybe she was hoping it would get her out of the trap that she's in.
In
any case, so that early speculation that he had been quite sick was in fact true. Remember when he came back to the White House and everyone was like, why does he look like he can't breathe? You know, when he took his mask off to spread COVID to everyone in the White House. The reason he looked like he couldn't breathe was because he could not breathe.
Yeah.
And also that's the magic of television. And it really makes it all the more sort of frustrating that he then downplayed how serious the illness was even after that experience. Because even Chris Christie admitted that COVID is no joke after he had been in the hospital for 7 days. And Trump, I mean, I think that they basically believe that if he hadn't gotten Regeneron, he would have died. He had the kind of case that you die of. He didn't have the kind of case that you walk out of the hospital and frolic in a car with.
Well, he's old and obese, so
he's the healthiest person that's ever been the president.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he's going to live till he's 200.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The doctor who said that didn't live to be 200 because he died recently, but Donald Trump, a man who will live to be 200.
Yeah.
In any case, other news that broke this week was that they now are up to 57 identified state and local Republican officials from at least 27 states who were in attendance on January 6th.
Yeah, Huffington Post has been, like, keeping track of this because, like, a week or so ago, they released, like, a list of, like, and I think photos even, of, like, 20 people who they had identified. And then what people have been doing is, like, basically, like, writing into Huffington Post and being like, oh, you have to revise your list because actually, here's a picture of this person, and that's my, you know, state city or my city council person or whatever. So they keep finding more people as they go, and people are like, it's functioning as basically like a tip line, pretty much.
Yeah.
So they're up to 57 now, up from like 20 not that long ago. So, like, obviously there are more than 57 also.
Yes.
Who were there?
They're
like,
going to find that there are hundreds.
That's just the number that we're at right now.
Only two of them have stepped down. Both of the two that stepped down were arrested. Mm-hmm. One was a delegate from West Virginia, and one was the secretary of the California Republican Assembly.
Yep.
There was a Virginia state senator who got censured and stripped of their committee assignments, and then two other censure attempts were voted down, one of a city councilwoman and one of a school board member, both in California. And then somebody was fired in Texas, a field organizer who was a Q person who believed in Pizzagate. None of the rest of them have resigned or been censured in any way. So that's awesome.
Wild. But these state parties are going around censuring people who voted for impeachment.
I know. Well, you got to have priorities, Brent. You got to have priorities.
But not people who are part of the mob that, like,
right. You know, not people who tried to overturn a Democratic election. Just, boy, some exciting traffic outside my house today. My. Have you been hearing this?
Well, it's been Manhattan.
These are active, fun times.
Yeah.
We also had our first Biden mini drama of the week. Yeah, a little
scandal.
Personnel mini scandal. Yeah, right. Mini scandal. A little personnel scandal.
Yeah.
The deputy press secretary, T.J. Ducklow, was suspended on Friday for a week without pay. Although many, including potentially
resigned,
Lila Nordstrom, he did resign. Okay, good.
I was going to
say,
so.
I believe that he should be more than suspended for a week without pay.
No, I'm pretty sure he was. Let me look actually while you.
But I hadn't. There was a Vanity Fair story got published. That a reporter from Politico was working on an article about TJ Ducklow's relationship with a reporter from another outlet.
Yep.
And the person who wrote that Vanity Fair story said that that Ducklow had, I know this is confusing because it's like three layers of press reporting on press, but basically, so the person who was working on the article that is in question is Tara Palmieri.
Yes.
Vanity Fair wrote a story about Tara Palmieri writing a story about TJ Ducklow. And in the Vanity Fair story, they reported that Ducklow had threatened Palmieri, saying he would, quote, destroy her if she published her piece about his relationship with, like, a political reporter or somebody like that.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he threatened to destroy her caught people's attention, made them think that that wasn't a nice thing to say, nor a professional thing to say to a reporter who's reporting on anything, including your personal life.
Yeah.
And then he got suspended for a week without pay, and then people in the White House started to be like, he should be fired, and then I guess he apologized
and left. Yeah, that's what happened. They initially just suspended him, and then everybody was like,
yeah, maybe we should do more.
Maybe. Right, so I think he, like, technically resigned.
Right. People in the White House always technically resign.
Of course, right.
That's... I feel like let them fire you so that you can get some unemployment. Like, I don't know. I guess he probably hasn't been working long enough to get unemployment, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? In any case, in final news, multiple usually warmer parts of the country have had, like, crazy winter weather this week, and there is a real epidemic of people not knowing how to appropriately drive in cold weather. So here are a few tips from those of us that have grown up in cold climates. One... Yeah. If you have ice on your windshield, which is a frequent problem you might face in the northern part of the country or Canada or somewhere, don't try to get it off by pouring water on it.
Nope, that doesn't
you
work.
You got to defrost
freezes.
That.
The thing about water is that it freezes.
It just, that's more water to freeze.
We've all seen the old fun trick where people throw a pot of boiling water into the air when it's freezing outside and it immediately turns to snow.
That's right.
Like, this is the thing. You've seen this.
Right. We've all seen the thing.
Right.
So a good idea if you're having an ice storm is to use your defroster and a scraper, ultimately,
start
to get the ice
early.
Off your windshield. Start your
10
car early.
Before
yeah.
You need to go someplace.
If you're wondering why on television shows people will often say they're starting their car and then go back inside and like if you're any show that fetishizes cold weather has this or like the Gilmore Girls, they're always going to start the car or like whatever. The reason they're doing that is because they're trying to defrost their car. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's something to do. Also, if it's super snowy, if there's been a foot or more of snow and your city doesn't own snowplows, you should just stay home that day.
You can't be driving through that.
Don't drive. Don't worry. Don't bother. Don't worry about it. If you only have a can of beans in your house, eat the can of beans. I mean, that is why people in cold climates freak out before big snowstorms is because they know they might be stuck in their homes. You just got to ride it out. So don't get in your car. If that's a situation. And also, keep a shovel in your car. Because if you get into a hole, some kind of snowdrift, you got to shovel yourself out.
That's right.
And that requires having some kind of shovel. So if it's snowy out,
or
you want to keep
even,
a shovel in there.
A bag of sand
A bag
helpful.
Of sand is an option.
A bag of ice.
Salt.
Or excuse me, not ice, salt. That's what I was going to say, rock salt, yes. Uh-huh. It's helpful.
There's a lot of options.
There's so many things. Yes.
Yeah. But you'll want to keep a scraper of some sort and a brush in your car as well. Yeah. And then the other thing is, if you know an ice storm is coming, put your windshield wipers up. Don't let them freeze to the windshield. So that's just some winter advice from us.
There you go.
It's important. It seems like a lot of people are struggling not knowing some of this stuff. I get it. If you live in a warm climate, how would you find this out?
You wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know. And it seems logical to pour water on the water to, you know, to warm it. I get it. It's not the most logical, but I mean, I get if you're like freaking out and you're like, can't see out of my windshield. I've never seen this before. How do you get rid of ice? You pour warm water on it. Sure. You tried.
Yeah.
It's not ultimately the solution that you were looking for.
It's also a recipe to crack your windshield.
It's a recipe to crack your windshield. That's true. Another thing though, that might never come up if you're, you know, I mean, who's to know what has come up if you're in Texas and an ice storm comes?
Right.
You know, it's find a friendly northerner to help you. If you have a neighbor who is from the north, that's a good person to befriend in a snowstorm. Yeah. They will often know what to do.
Yep.
And, you know, just keep it together. In any case, that's some helpful advice from us.
There you go.
Tips and tricks for winter weather. We're here to help with both winter weather and sinkholes when they arise. And so our sinkhole advice is mostly just don't fall into one. Right. And don't be in Florida. That's another good piece of sinkhole advice. It's the main one.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you next week when, I don't know, we have nothing to report on next week because the Senate is going to be on vacation. So if you're expecting your $2,000, first of all, stop.
Ain't happening.
It's not happening.
First off, it's $1,400.
It's $1,400. Second of all, it's not going to happen next week. So just, you know, take some time for you, too. And we will talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.